Carbonell. All right, welcome everybody. We got like Hall of Famer, Guy Carbonell. Does it ever get old to hear that? Guy Carbonell, Hall of Famer, joining the show. Holy cow.
It's only since 2019, so it's not getting that old, but it's always, you know, like I said, like I think all my life, and I probably you did the same thing, like, you know, when I was a kid, my dream was, you know, one, to play in the NHL, and two, to win a Stanley Cup. It's always been the dream. I don't think ever somebody thought when they were growing up that they were going to go into the Hall of Fame. So when you get the phone call, it's pretty amazing.
No, it's super. I can only imagine. You know, that's got to be a special kind of experience. But you growing up in Quebec, you know, I don't want to butcher where you were born, Sept Isles.
Seven Island.
Seven Islands?
Well, it's in English. In French, it's Sept Îles, so it's Seven Islands.
Okay, yeah. So you're born there, and it sounds like you're living there still, so obviously a beautiful spot.
Well, I don't live there. I left, this is like way east of Montreal.
Okay.
I played all my minor hockey there growing up, and then I got drafted by Chicoutimi in the junior major. So I left home at almost 16 years old to start, you know, my career, and I never really went back. I spent 4 years in Chicoutimi, met my wife there, you know, and then I went Halifax, Montreal, and then, you know, build a house here, and always, I think Montreal has always been the base, even when I was to St. Louis in Dallas, you know, I had a great teammates in my youth, and I always heard when Bob Gainey retired, I think he went to France to coach and with his family and sold his house here, and he always like felt bad because he thought like the kids never had a place to to call home, so it's always stuck in my mind. So even if we left for St. Louis or Dallas, I always kept this house here.
Yeah, smart. Well, I just wanted to kind of go back because you obviously grew up in Quebec, idolizing, I'm guessing, the Montreal Canadiens. And you talk about, you know, wanting that Hall of Fame career. You obviously had people to look up to. I was just curious because you came into the league full-time, 82-83.
Yep.
And I was like, damn, you know, Montreal, successful franchise, most cups in history. And they had the 15 years before you got to that team, they won 10 cups.
Yep.
10 Stanley Cups in 15 years. And if you go back a little further, they won 16 Stanley Cups in 28 years. So as a kid from Montreal, you know, getting drafted to the Montreal Canadiens, there's 20-some teams at the time. You get picked by the Canadiens in the third round. You have to be ecstatic.
Yeah.
What's the pressure, Guy Carbonell, going, and I'm sure you've maybe thought about it, but you walk into this locker room, you're a 19-year-old kid, there's Larry Robinson, there's Steve Shutt, there's Guy Lafleur, there's all, like, Keith, like, all these guys, Gilbert Dionne, and all these guys, maybe not Gilbert Dionne, but all these guys are there in 82, 83. Is there pressure for you to try to maintain the legacy of the Montreal Canadiens?
I don't know if there was pressure. Obviously, you know, I think everyone that gets drafted that wants to play in the NHL or any of the sports, you know, professional, I think there's always pressure to perform, to show the people that you can do it. I was no different. You know, I got drafted in 79. That's the year they won their fourth cup in a row.
Yeah.
So, you know, you come to training camp thinking, oh my God, like I'm going to make the NHL, but you know, you see that all those guys won, you know, one, two, or three, or four cups in a row. So,
yeah.
I think for me, I was more nervous, obviously ecstatic, when I got the call that I was going to get drafted by the Montreal Canadiens, you know, a kid from Quebec, you know, here. When I was young, growing up, you know, we only had games on Saturday night, and it was always the Montreal Canadiens against somebody else. So, you know, obviously Guy Lafleur and those guys, you know, were always somebody that we looked up to. And I'm, you know, funny thing is, like, after I got drafted, I showed up at training camp. I've never had a chance to go to the forum. I've never had the chance to get in. So when I got, you know, my first day at training camp was my first day in the building. And, you know, you think about, you know, iconic building. Oh, yeah. That was so, I was really nervous. You know, in those days, it was four teams, you know, 80 players. That, you know, when your number was over 35, you knew that you knew that your
not
chance
a good
of
sign.
Staying was. But you know, my first day, I think at training camp, I had Guy Lafleur and Steve Shutt on both sides. So, you know, it was pretty unreal. And you know, there's obviously I didn't make it. I went back to junior. I had two training camps after that, and same thing. Like you know, there was no room for me really.
You think
you deserve to be there, but so I played 2 years in Halifax in the American League. I had two really good years, and then you know, starting you know my third year, they traded Doug Risebrough and Doug Jarvis to make room for myself and Dan Daou, and the battle started from day one. But it was fun, like. You know, you're always wondering, you know, why those teams are good. You know, like the Montreal Canadiens, the Islanders, teams that were really successful for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And once you have a chance to meet those guys day in, day out, you realize that it's not only just the hockey players, it's the person.
Yeah.
They're always willing to help. There's no jealousy. So it was a good time to be there, and on top of that, you know, having all those guys, like we had Jean Béliveau and Maurice Richard and Henri Richard and Yvan Cournoyer that was always around us. So,
oh no, kidding! That's awesome.
So yeah.
Well, I played for Montreal one game. They called me up, so I am an alum. So take that, Guy Carbonell. We're part of the same group, regardless.
Hey, you're part of the alumni.
That's right. The one thing I'll remember is, you know, I obviously didn't get to play in the Forum. I was a little bit too young for that. But going into the Bell Center, the one thing you notice is all the jerseys retired. And nowadays, you can't even wear a number from 1 to 20 because everybody's retired. It's literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way to 20. It's insane how many great players have played there. But I want to kind of just – you mentioned, oh, I would have been nervous anywhere I would have played. Listen. Like you're from the Montreal area. If you get drafted by the Hartford Whalers, I don't think you're as nervous going into a locker room with those guys versus going into a locker room with the guys who were there at the time. So was there any, you have to maintain the Montreal Canadian standard. So, and I'm trying to contrast that these days to a Cole Caufield or a Nick Suzuki or a Slakowski, young guys who are doing it right now. There's a certain, you know, bar that has to be met in Montreal, right?
Well, I think the younger guys, you know, in the last maybe 20 years, like you said, like the last cup that we won here was 1993. So it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
In my days, they were winning the cup almost every five years, like you said, but four in a row. We won in 86. We won in 93. Mm-hmm. So there's obviously pressure to keep the legacy going. You know, I think, like I said, like I had the privilege to be drafted and then having a chance to kind of grow with some of those guys that were successful that, you know, you have a chance on the road to talk pretty much every day about, you know, what you need to do to be a professional, what you need, you know, all that thing that comes with being a champion. And I'm not saying that it's lost along the way. I don't think, you know, the young generation now maybe thinks a little differently. Sometimes you have the right group. I think that's what we have now. You know, we have at the head Nick Suzuki that was undrafted by Montreal, but as soon as he got here, you know, he's a member of the golf course here in Montreal. If Cole Caufield is a member of the golf course, it never happened in the past. Nobody kind of, you know.
Was that right?
As soon as the season was over, they were, boom, we're gone.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, and then you see the young kids, you know, Slafkovsky and Demidov and those guys, and they stay a little bit more in the summer. I think they realize that this is not a bad place. You know, people think that Montreal is a bad place or Toronto is a bad place, that there's too much pressure. All they want to see is kids or players working hard.
Yeah.
You know, they know they're getting paid a lot of money and they want to see the effort on the ice. you know, winning is always fun.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, you see the team. You know, the last year and a half, 2 years, they're growing together. They're being successful together, and I don't see anything bad about, you know, nobody's saying bad things about anybody because they're working hard. So that's all they need to do.
I think that has a lot to do with, and I was a little critical when they hired Martin St. Louis to be the head coach because they plucked him out of, like, he was coaching his kid's high school team or something like that.
Yeah.
No experience whatsoever. But, you know, fast forward to now, a couple years later, he seems to have, he's got the heartbeat of the city. He's got these players buying into what it means to be a Montreal Canadian. Yeah. And like you mentioned, they do care about the city itself. It seems like, because when I played that one singular game, I got to spend a week with the Canadians, but there, you know, it was almost toxic in the locker room. There was PK, there was Lars Eller there. Everybody hated each other. And I just walked in on it. This is weird. You guys, this is like weird. And now it seems like they flipped the switch.
Yeah.
And can you speak to this team? Because everything seems to be working and every button Martin pushes seems to be the right button at the right time. And you watch him after the wins, he's a part of the group. Like, he's one of the guys.
Yeah.
And just speak to that, because it's such an amazing turnaround from 5-6 years ago.
Well, I don't want to take anything away from him.
Yeah.
He got into a really good situation. You know, got hired by a friend of his, Kent, which, you know, I was as surprised as you when I heard his name. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that ex-hockey players can be good coach. They just need the time to grow.
Yeah.
Like, I've said this, like, I had the chance to coach for 3 years, 2 years as an assistant, 3 years almost as a head coach. And I was way better at the end than I was at the beginning, you know, because you have to go through the process. It's a new generation. It's new things. You know, the game is a little bit more complicated than it was in our days. So, but having Kent at the head and no pressure to, I think there's always pressure to win, but there was no, you know, he didn't have to bench guys at the beginning. So I think he had time to learn who they were, what they can do. And he just had, you know, give himself time to kind of see what I need to do, what button I can push, what button I can't. So we give him time. It gave him time to realize those things. And now that they have way more talent, you know, in the lineup, he was able to kind of design, you know, some plays and some strategies. I think the players, you know, just bought in, and now I think, you know, I think he knows his team a lot better. He's able to push the right button, and, you know, because of the talent that they have, they're a lot better team. So it's fun. Like, the city has been excited, not just because of playoff. I think they've been excited since last year.
Well, you can tell the optimism in the future, and they're growing. I don't think they'll win the Stanley Cup this year. I don't think they're there. I think Colorado is very, very strong. And it's their cup to lose. But this is an exciting time to be a Montreal Canadian. And going back to your first Stanley Cup, kind of the contrast between the two teams or the similarities. Young goaltender, Patrick Waugh, you know, obviously you were there when 19-year-old kid coming in. They got Dobish coming in, playing great. A very young team. Your first Stanley Cup, I'm looking at the ages of these guys. It's mostly 22, 23, 24, four teenagers. Like, it's just, it was a really young, inexperienced team. And the same nowadays, when you got the Demidov, you got the Hudsons, most of the guys now on the Montreal Canadiens are 25 and under.
Yep.
So what was your role on that team? Because you were a veteran at that time at 25 years old. You were one of the, you know, the old tooths. What did you have to do to keep those young guys in check? Like, a Stefan Richer, for Pete's sake, was 19 years old.
Well, you know, it just happened. Our season, regular season, was okay, but not great. And then we had all those guys like Claude Lemieux, Stefan Richer, Patrick Waugh, and a couple of other guys that came up from the American League. And I think they just brought in a freshness that we needed. You know, once you get into the end of the season, it's a long season. Everybody's tired. It just gave us a second win. And then, you know, Patrick stopped everything that needed to be stopped. You know, I look at what the Montreal Canadiens is right now. I mean, take Dobesh out. Not that Fowler wouldn't have done the same thing, but you know, he's made some saves to keep the team. When teams, you just need your goalie to make the save when things are not going right. Mm-hmm. For your chance, the team to get back and on top, and that's what, and I think that's what Dobesh has done since he's been here. Like he's gave this team chances to stay in games, really tight games. He made some save to keep the game, you know, by one goal or you know even, and then with the talent that they have, they were able to kind of take advantage of it. And I think that's what we had in '86. You know, we had some games where we were not really that good. But no, he just stopped everything. And then, you know, we were able to kind of get back into the game and win that game or, you know, win the series. And
it was
fun.
It's funny, one of your best players in that team, well, he was a coach of mine in San Jose, Larry Robinson. 82 points, you know, he had in 78 games. That's insane, especially for a guy his size. He wasn't, you know, a small fleet-footed defenseman. The guy's 6'3" and would punish people on the D zone. Like, but he was so good offensively. And then you look at Lane Hutson, who's like 5'7", soaking wet, and just floats on the ice. How different is that? Because you're a defensive-minded forward. How hard would it be to defend Lane Hutson? Because it's different to defend Larry Robinson. He's going to go through you. He's going to go around you. That's tough. But Hutson is so dynamic.
I know. I'm kind of surprised and in awe of what he's been able to do since he started his NHL career. You know, I think for me, I always said that Wayne Gretzky was the greatest. I think his mind was thinking differently than anybody else. So in that way, he was really hard to cover. But physically, I was able to kind of maintain it. Like if I got into a corner, I was okay with him. You know, Mario Lemieux was as smart and as skilled, but he was way bigger than me. So, you know, if I tried to be physical with him, I would have got in trouble. So I had to kind of stay back a little bit and cover the space. I think that's what players are trying to do with Lane. They're not trying to go at him right away because they know he's so good, but he's so elusive. He never does the same thing twice. You know, what's amazing for me, you know, I've watched him now for 2 years and a little bit more. I can count on my two hands the time that he got hit hard.
Yeah, right? He never gets touched.
Never.
But he has the puck, like, when he's on the ice half the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's not because he's hiding. He's just, he's got, you know, the great players always have a second sense or seventh sense. He's got sense.
Well, yeah, and then let's stay on the great players because I'm fascinated. And if you're getting tired, let me know because I'm grilling you with these questions because you have a unique kind of perspective because you've been there. You've won two cups with the Canadians, obviously one with Dallas. But a guy like Cole Caulfield, you know, you've played with the best of the best. You've played against the best. He's struggling. And even watching the game, and I said it, you know, at an earlier show, he's not jumping out on me on the page. When I watch the Canadians these days, like Demidov looks dynamic. He looks so good. He's making plays. Suzuki, he's doing his thing. Cole Caulfield looks a little lethargic, a little stagnant, like he's trying too hard. What would you say to him as a former head coach, as a former, you know, Stanley Cup winner, Hall of Famer? What do you think he's doing? Not wrong, but guy scored 51, Guy, in the regular season, you know?
Well, I mean, I know Martin Saint-Louis is talking to him a lot. You know, I don't think they want to put pressure. Those kind of guys have, you know,
enough pressure.
You know, they know what to do. It's not like he's not trying to score. You know, in the game yesterday, 2 days ago, you know, he had a bunch of chance. Now maybe that goal will give him, you know, the incentive, not the incentive, but the
confidence,
get him going, you know, like not thinking too much. Sometimes, like, you know, we have to remember a guy like him in a regular season has probably 2, 3, 4 seconds to shoot. In the playoffs, you don't have that.
Yeah.
You have 1 second. And, you know, if you look around the league, in the playoffs right now, most of the top players, you know, some of them have, you know, just kept going all the time, but mm-hmm. most of them have a tough time because the other team knows who their best players are. And they do, you know, they have the videos, like I said, people, like, they got five coaches now. And I guarantee you three of them are watching videos 20 hours a day to figure out, you know, is he turning left? Is he turning right? What does he do when he gets to the red line or to blue line? What does, you know, so they pretty much know everything they know, they want to know about those players. So the coverage is a little tighter. They put, you know, instead of giving 4 feet in regular season, they, you know, they gave him two feet in playoffs. So there's not a lot of room for those guys to be as successful. You know, I think they just got to keep doing what they're doing. And you know, once they start to get that confidence that they can do it, like I saw Cofield this year score goals, like he hit, like there was only room for the puck and he was able to shoot it there. Yeah. So, you know, I think he just needs to get that confidence back that he can do it, and he'll be okay.
I want to ask you, and and coaches do game plan, and they take away the biggest threat, and the biggest threat is Cole. So obviously that's why he's not getting the chances that he used to get. But I want to talk about the last 51 goal score, and this wasn't on my agenda or anything, but Stefan Richer, I love Stefan Richer.
Yeah.
Like, he is one of the best guys ever. I've done a lot of, you know, charity stuff with him. A blast. He's a different type player than Cole Caulfield.
Oh, yeah.
You had him as a kid, a 19-year-old kid. What was it like playing with a guy who the talent, the sky was the limit?
Yeah.
You know, he could have been the best player ever, potentially.
Well, he had
that much talent.
I had the chance to play. Yeah, I had the chance to play with him. I had the chance to do after, like, with Mike Modano. You know, if you put together different parts of a body and build a hockey player, mm-hmm. those two players would be, you know, there's more players that, like, you know, like that, but those two players, Stefan and Mike Modano, would be the ideal. Like, they both, like 6'3", 6'4", build like a freaking rock. they both have a shot, you know, that they can score anywhere, and they both can pass the puck, you know, and make plays. So, I mean, he just like, he was funny because I saw it in Mike, but like with Stefan, it just, you know, when he got pushed, he wanted it to get better. Like I remember one day we were in LA, and then we were playing somewhere else 2 days later. And after the first period, I think it was like 3-0. We were losing 3-0. And Pat Burns came in the room after and he said, "You guys think that you're going to go out after the game, blah, blah, blah." I said, "I'm going to put a curfew." I think Stefan came in and scored 3 goals in the third period and one in overtime. That was it. He didn't want
motivation.
He in the room. But that's how good those guys are. When, you know, when they have something in their heads, they're just they could be amazing.
Yeah, and it's he the shot that he had, and I've been around guys with hard shots. Like even as a Zdeno Chara, you can tell it's heavy, but Richer jumped off his stick. Like it was just noticeably just a rocket of a shot. So you win your first Stanley Cup. You get another one in 92-93. Correct me if I'm wrong. You and Wah were the only two carryovers from that first Stanley Cup winning team. I was trying to compare the rosters, but there wasn't many lingers. Look at him. He's looking over his shoulder. You're so funny.
I think there would be more than that, but that would be that could be close.
Yeah, there wasn't many. What was the difference between the first and the second? Because obviously, well, there was a 5-6 years in between the Stanley Cups. It was 85, 86, now 92, 93. You're older now. You're the veteran, the captain of the team.
I was in my 30s.
So you're one of the old guys. Yeah. How does that change your perspective and role on the team?
Well, I keep telling people, like people ask me, which one of the three is the best? You know, the first one is always, you know, because that was my dream growing up. And, you know, the last 20 seconds or 30 seconds of the third period or whatever period that ends the series, mm-hmm. and you have a chance to win. There's so long, but there's so many memories that goes back into your mind. You know, your practices at 5 o'clock in the morning, your injuries that you had to come back over, like your mom driving you to the rink to go to tournaments and things like that.
Right. Yeah.
Everything goes into your mind. the second one and the third one gave me the chance to kind of back up and really enjoy it. Like I felt the first one, you know, we won in Calgary, and we were in the room after for hours and hours. And then after that, we got into the flight, flew to Montreal, landed at the airport. There was thousands of people there in the morning. And then, you know, parties, and parade, and, you know, it's like you're waking up 2 weeks later and said, wow, what happened? Like, I didn't get a chance to enjoy it. So the second and the third one kind of gave me chance to, you know, if you look at when we won in 93, as soon as Gary Bettman gave me the cup, I wanted to give it to Denis Savard, because I thought, you know, I could have kept it for 5 minutes, but I wanted to get somebody excited. And I knew Denis had a great career, never had the chance to win, and that was his. So, you know, he was able to do that. After a couple hours into the room, I threw everybody out, parents, wives, kids, kept just the players and the staff and the coaches. Yeah. And that was probably the greatest moment that we've had. And I did the same thing in Dallas. So it gave me perspective a little bit. So it was fun. But, you know, when you win the first one, it's just chaos.
So what, and you don't need to go into specifics, but you kick everybody out. So, well, hey, how hard is that? You just stand up on the bench and say, get out. Like, how do you do that?
It was something that I thought about like for a while, and, you know, took me a while to do it, but I was able to do it and just close the doors. And it was fun because the doctors, you know, you get so many injuries. The doctors were there, and the coaches, and some of the staff that doesn't have the chance to be in the room that often here. But, you know, the moment that they were able to, you know, everybody wanted to speak, you know, to kind of congratulate one guy or the team, or, you know, it was just so much fun.
Oh, man, that's so cool. Yeah. And then to be able to do it in Dallas, you win as like a 24, 25-year-old. And then you go to Dallas as just a veteran. You're there to mentor guys.
Yeah, I was 39.
You're 39 years old, Guy, when you win that cup, and you have these young kids and these stars and Hall and Madonna and Neuendijk. You guys were loaded.
Yeah.
What's that like in that locker room? Because, you know, like your career is almost – you're on the – talk about the back nine. You're on the 18th green. Like, you're almost done. What is that like? Because you just won the cup. It's got to be insanely just – you're just taking it all in at this point, the prior 20 some years of your career.
Well, I knew when Bob, you know, traded for me, like, you know, I was in St. Louis. That was the year of the lockout. So we only have half a year. And then I think Bob Bassett got hurt in the preseason games. And so he called Mike Keenan and asked if I was available. And Keenan came to see me and said, "You have a chance. I have a chance to trade you to Dallas. Do you want to go?" And I said yes, because I knew who was there and that they had a chance to win. So I accepted the trade. We went there, and you know, Bob built a team like a logo block. Like, you know, the first year we were not that good. The second year we were getting better, and the third year was, you know, they went Brett Hall and Joe Neuwendijk and Sergei Zubov. And those were the days where we didn't have a cap, so it was easier. But it was pretty amazing, like, to be part of that team and build it up and to being a contender. You know, the year before we lost in the playoff, and I think everybody came back the next year and said, you know, not ever again. So that was a fun year to be part of. And then we lost in 2000. And during that year, that was my last year. I knew at Christmas that I told my wife, I think I'm done after this year. Not that I didn't, I just didn't have the patience to in between the games.
Yeah.
So we lost in the final against Jersey, and I took my equipment and I threw it in the garbage.
Oh, no kidding. Seriously?
Yeah. I threw it in the garbage, and I went around the room and I said, "Guys, I'm done. Bye-bye."
40 years old, not a bad run. Like, holy cow, that what a career. I want to go – I had a question. One of the guys on my Patreon asked – he's a huge Dallas Stars fan. I'm sure he's met you a million times, but he said, ask him about the culture shock going from Montreal where it's just hockey, so knowledgeable, everybody knows it, to St. Louis, where, you know, it's a kind of a football, baseball town, then the Blues, they're popular, but what's that like going from that environment in Montreal to the Midwest, St. Louis?
Well, it was way different. I think I enjoy it because, you know, I mean, the climate is different. Everything is different, but yeah. I think if you want to win, you need to have that kind of pressure a little bit. You know, when I got to St. Louis, it was funny. Like there's a indoor parking lot and to go to the game. And I got to the game one day and I couldn't get in because people didn't recognize me. Said, I'm playing tonight. Like I,
that's so funny. You don't look like an athlete. I'll just say.
No, exactly. So, and Dallas, same thing. Like Dallas, I think, was kind of great. I think we got better at the right time. Like he had the Cowboys, Mavericks, the Texas Rangers, and you know all those sports that were way bigger than us. But
yeah.
When I got there in '95, those teams were not great. Mm-hmm. So and then we were starting to get so we took a lot of that publicity and built it up, and I think you know. Now hockey was on the map and a lot of people kind of recognized, you know, us on the street and things like that. So it was a good place to be at the right time.
And then you had some players who were just like, they were stars. So that helped too. No pun intended, but like Mike O'Donnell.
You're right.
Guys, like he's got the look. And you and I were more, you know, radio faces. Mike Modano is. No, you have a face for TV. I'm talking about myself. You're a good looking guy, Keith.
Thank you.
Sorry. I apologize. One last thing, and then I'll let you go. I know you probably got a million things to do with the Canadians and all that stuff, but Selke Trophy. You're known as Mr. You know, do-it-all. You can score, you can put points on the board, but you can shut down a Wayne Gretzky, a Mario Lemieux. That was your calling card.
Yeah.
What do you see, like, this era of players, they don't like playing defense. You know, I think it's that can be said. They like to do the showy stuff. Let's rip. Let's do toe drags. Let's score goals. I want the highlight reel. I want to be on, you know, TikTok and all that stuff. What did you do to prepare for a game? Because you sacrifice offense. When you look at your stats, like Guy and Shakutami, your final year, you had 182 points.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a lot of stinking points. And then yes. Did you like, it is like I played 43 years. I've been alive. If I count up all my beer league, all my minor leagues, I don't have 182 points. Like I don't. You saw me in Delaney. I still stink. Yeah. But what did you mentally just go? Okay, I'm going to have to sacrifice offense to stay in the NHL to be a valuable player to my team.
Well, I think there's no doubt that you have to kind of sacrifice a little bit of things.
Yeah.
If you want to be, I think you see it like Kopitar, Barkov, you know, Nick Suzuki. I mean, they really think hard to play well defensively, but they still get 100 points a year. Mm-hmm. I think you have to give up a little bit. But, like, my thing has always been, like, get the puck as quick as possible back on your stick, you know. So, positioning, obviously, depending on the game, you know, there's chances that you can't take. But yeah. Most of the times when I had the puck on my stick, I was trying to score. But, you know, I knew that if I could, you know, and I always had, I played in the era where we didn't have a lot of videos, but my memory on the ice, I was able to visualize a lot of things, remember a lot of things. I knew with Gretzky and Lemieux and Peter Stastny, I was able to kind of remember a lot of what they do on the ice and tendencies that they have. So I was able, like they do today, you know, except they look at videos and they see a power play. Okay, they like to shoot from the right side. Well, my thing was just, okay, take that away and see what they can do. So I was able to kind of remember those things during the plays, so it helped me a lot.
Was there a couple guys, you mentioned Mario Lemieux, who was the hardest guy to defend? Because you obviously had matchups versus the best of the best.
I always had we had some really good battles with Stastny.
Okay.
Peter was a big boy, and it was tough. Like he was strong, and I said, so I probably gave him a couple slashing, but he did the same thing to me.
I asked Denny Savard this question. You've been in some fights. Like, I'm looking at your hockey fights here. You fought Alex McGillney. You fought Sergey Gonchar. I can't watch the videos, unfortunately. What's your best fight? Dale Hunter, it looks like you fought in Quebec. Which one do you look back on and go, that was a good one?
I've ever had a really good fight. I think it was just survival. I was, like you said, I was playing a style of play that wasn't light.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to see somebody really beside you. They want to have space. And I was able to kind of take that away from them. So there was a lot of time during games where people were not happy with what I was doing. So, I mean, I was just trying to defend myself. Like, I was never a good fighter. I was never a fighter. But I knew if I dropped the glove, I didn't want to get killed. So you got to protect yourself a little bit.
Who was your best, toughest, tough guy that you had protecting you?
I think it was Barry Peterson in Boston.
Yeah.
Like, he was a really good player, too. And I think he had enough one day, and he punched me and hit me in the ear. And I went down. I didn't lose it, but, man, that
Did you guys back in the day, because Montreal is known, obviously you had Chelios. Who was you had Knuckles Nyland. Was he the main enforcer for the Canadiens back in the day?
We had John Kordick a little bit later. Chris was a really good one. And he was playing on my line, so you can imagine.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so we were playing together. We played together with Bob Gainey for about 3 years. So you can imagine, in a game where nothing was going well, you get ready for a face-off inside the blue line or it's outside the blue line, and Chris was coming behind me and said, "Carbo, watch my back." And I'm like,
nope.
So the first thing you do, you just go from watch, okay, who's on the ice? Okay, I'm grabbing him.
Oh, that's so funny. He was one of the most, well, he still is. He talks nonstop. Yep, yep, yep. I can't imagine the stuff he said on the ice to those guys to get him going, because he was just like probably a treat to play with for a few years.
It was fun.
But anyways, Canadians going to beat the Sabres probably based on the last two games.
You know what? They're looking good right now. I mean, they got them rattled a little bit. The last two games, but the Sabres haven't been able to kind of be themselves. So I expect best game tonight from them. I just hoping that Montreal can match that, but they're looking good.
Any adjustments that you would make for the Canadiens? I know the last two games have been pretty solid. Like
I mean, I've said this, they want to play man on man defensively, which I don't like, but I understand what they're trying to do. That's for me that would be the only change. But they got talent. They can score goals. And right now they have a goalie that makes the saves. When they're dipping and they're struggling, Dobesh is being able to make the saves that allowed them to stay in the game. So, it's going to be fun to watch the next couple of games.
Well, it's been fun talking to you, Guy. I really appreciate you jumping on. You're one of a kind, Hall of Famer. Good luck with everything. I'm sure you'll, be lighting that flag or beating the drum, whatever they do in Montreal. So, thank you. Thank you very much, Guy, for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
All right, Guy Corbrunneau, everybody. Have a good day. We'll talk to you later. Cheers.